Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is February 23rd, 2013, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Who Are You? Now, this is the 25th podcast for the SGEM, and every so often I like to take a 10,000-foot view of things. In previous episodes, we've looked at the top five free online access to medical education sites, and more recently, we looked at the Choosing Wisely campaign. And that reminds me, congratulations to ACEP, or the American College of Emergency Physicians, for finally joining the Choosing Wisely initiative to make sure that we are not over-testing and over-treating the patients we serve in the emergency department. Back to the title of today's podcast, Who Are You? Well, there's been a lot of great feedback since launching the SGEM in the fall of 2012. A few individuals have really helped improve the project, and these include Dr. Chris Carpenter, or as Captain Cranium, as I like to call him, and Jason Wagner. But we have one extra special constructive critical person, and I'm going to ask her to introduce herself. So, Catherine, can you introduce yourself to the SGEM listeners?
Hi there. As a short introduction, I'd like to call myself Katrin Hruska, and I'm a physician from Sweden. I'm very interested in social media, and of course, I follow the SGEM podcast.
Isn't that excellent? I got a Swedish accent, so nobody has to listen to my terrible accents. I've got an original, authentic Swedish accent on the SGEM. I'll just give a little bit of background before we dive into your constructive criticism, and hopefully I can answer some of your questions, and thinking that maybe other SGEM listeners have similar questions that you have about what this thing is all about. Well, the SGEM wants to turn med ed on its head. It uses social media as a disruptive technology to provide the frontline providers, yes, that's you, with the high quality, clinically relevant information to the patient bedside. The podcast lets the SGEM listeners turn their car into a classroom for their 15-minute commute. Rather than eminence-based medicine from the gray hairs and the no hairs trickling down to the masses, the SGEM tries to bubble it up from the grassroots. Where does the information come from? It comes from the Best Evidence in Emergency Medicine project, started by my EBM, or evidence-based medicine guru, mentor, Dr. Andrew Worcester from McMaster University. He put together the Beam Dream team of EBM. He designed this almost a decade ago to take the highest quality, medically relevant emergency medicine information, send it out to frontline emergency doctors to screen what they thought were important topics to cover, and then he put together a group to critically review that literature and present it at conferences. And this is a natural extension of this. And with social media, it is the message. The Gen Ys can teach their baby boom teachers about podcasts and Twitter. And when it comes to Twitter, I think it was specifically designed for emergency doctors. I mean, if you can't get your message across in 140 characters or less, I'm not listening anymore. Well, the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, it was a revolution when it started. I thought, geez, how am I going to get this message out to a wide audience? And that was the revolution when the podcast started. And I've adapted new techniques and learned how to use GarageBand and edit podcasts. But now we're into an evolution. And that's why I want Katrin on the show to help me evolve this further and see what's worked in the past. Specifically things like the Keener contest, having a pubcast in Oxford, England, having guests on like Tony Sapal or Lauren Westerfer. But some things I've struggled with, like finding the right microphone to get good audio quality. I've fallen down at times, made mistakes, but I'm here to pick myself up, answer any constructive criticism that people have, and try to make this the best possible education value. So, let's get started. What questions do you have about the SGEM?
Okay, so first of all, as I've told you before, I think this is a great production, and I think that you put a lot of effort into making this a great show. But what I still don't really understand is what problem it is that you're trying to solve. And I've heard you many times talk about the knowledge translation gap and how long it takes for knowledge to trickle out to the audience. And is that what you're trying to achieve, or what is the ultimate goal? In your dreams, what's the best thing you can hope for?
In my dreams, I want patients to get the best possible care. That's the ultimate goal. And I want patients to get the best possible care. And part of that involves having the best possible evidence. That's only a component of it. Evidence-based medicine is not just about the evidence. It's about making judicial use of the evidence with the patient in front of you and what the physician brings from their experience. But a key component is, what's the evidence? And if the evidence isn't reaching the physician to be able to apply to the patient's bedside, they're not getting the best possible care.
Okay, so do you see us listeners as the students and yourself as the teacher?
No, I see myself more as part of a community, and I am a conduit. I am a disseminator. I am not the original generator of the information. We've critically appraised it with evidence-based medicine experts, so that's been critically appraised. But now we're trying to distill it down and get it into the hands of the frontline providers, so they're the ones closest to the patient. And we know that it can take up to 10 years. And I think this is where your criticism is coming from, because that 10-year mark, there's been some articles published that suggest it's anywhere between 6 and 13 years to get the information out until it's actually being practiced in the community. And so we throw out an average of 10 years for high quality, clinically relevant information to actually be adopted.
Yeah, that was one of my questions about those 10 years, where they came from. And you sent me an article that said it took 6 to 13 years before that evidence actually reached the providers. But when I looked at that original article, it was actually a 20-year-old article coming from the cardiologist saying that the ones writing the guidelines hadn't even looked at the original studies, and that the meta-analysis that they had conducted did not include all the evidence. So I think that we're in a completely different situation now, 20 years later, and that those 10 years are really referring to something else.
I think that's true. The article I did send you was from the early 90s, at least the original references, sorry, not the article itself. But some of the evidence that we have with regards to knowledge translation actually was generated back then, looking at the metrics of how long it typically took to get this information into the community. And the cardiology literature was one area that had a significant amount of information, but there's lots of different stories about looking backwards, like retrospectively. And to speed that process up in the 21st century, social media should be able to cut that knowledge translation window down so physicians can practice the highest form of evidence.
Well, I think that internet in itself has solved a lot of those problems, and you've got PubMed and you can do searches that you couldn't do 20 years ago or even 15 years ago. And do you think that there could be a problem now with social media? That be a problem, that the knowledge translation gap is actually too narrow?
Absolutely. You bring up a good point. And as that famous Spider-Man quote, with great power comes great responsibility. If I want to back up my little metaphor earlier, I could say we're looking for the Goldilocks zone. All right, right now we have much too long, considering the tools we have in front of us. We take much too long for knowledge translation. Twitter, of course, 140 characters, may be much too fast for implementing certain things. And we're looking for that not too hot, not too cold, the just right.
Because I think that a lot of the things that you have addressed are actually more reactive. That the PPI, about not giving PPI to ulcers.
Oh, you're referring to the proton pump inhibitors for upper GI bleeds podcast.
Yes, exactly. And that people started giving PPIs for upper GI bleeds. That also originated from some kind of research, I assume. And now we're starting to look at it from the other side, saying, hey, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. But it's not like people started without having any evidence, right?
That's correct. Yeah, you have some evidence, but it's like an evolution. It's like an onion. It has layers. So as new information comes out, we've got to be able to adapt and respond to it. And being a skeptic, because that brings in the title of the podcast, being a skeptic, one of the key components of being a skeptic is to be able to look at new information and incorporate that into your practice and say, okay, well, maybe that doesn't work, and be able to throw out some old held ideas.
Yeah, because that was one of my first objections to your podcast, was that the way you were presenting things, it sounded like it was the final solution, that we had the final answers.
Oh, no, this is not a bimodal podcast. It's not yes or no. It may be yes for now, or it may be no for now. But if new information comes out, we will do another podcast and reevaluate the literature.
Because I think that a lot of the discussions in social media are more like they, and it's always them.
Who are they?
I don't know. It's all the other ones, the bad doctors, and we're the good ones, right?
Oh, of course.
They think that PPIs are good for upper GI bleeds, and we know they're not. And I don't know, maybe in 10 years, it will turn out that we were the ones who were wrong. But this is what we know for now, and this is what we can do for now.
I don't think evidence-based medicine has to be adversarial, or different specialties have to be adversarial. I think it should be a collaborative endeavor. And especially if we all start with the basis, we're in it for the best interest of the patient. And we are all trying to do what we think is the best for the patient. And as Dr. Andrew Worster says, depending on the situation, it depends. So how do we apply the evidence that we have to the patient in front of us? And it may depend on each clinical situation.
Of course. And that brings me to the next question. And that is, after listening to your podcast.
Does that mean, sorry to interrupt, but does that mean I've answered the first question?
Sort of.
I'm trying. Okay.
I think you're doing a good job. Well, the next one is, so after listening to your podcast, what would you like the listener to do differently?
After listening to the podcast, I hope it stimulates conversation within their peer group and also outside of their peer group, so that these barriers are broken down, and so that the message can be freely spread between all individuals involved in patient care. Doesn't sound clear. Okay, so that it's a basis, it's a starting point. Certainly in a 15-minute podcast, you can't cover everything and all the different nuances. So it opens up the conversation so that on rounds that they can be discussing this. In lecture theater, it could be stimulating a conversation such as, hey, I heard a podcast recently that said we shouldn't be using PPIs in upper GI bleeds. What do you think?
And what do you think can come out of a discussion like that?
Well, I think that anytime you open up a discussion and communication, you can have improved care and an enhanced understanding if it's done in a good way.
So my next question is, who shouldn't listen to your podcast?
Well, I'd not really thought about who shouldn't, because I think that we make attempt, we meaning me as organizing it and getting guests on it, I think I try very, very hard to make sure different levels can get something out of it. I know from people who are listening now that we have a variety of provider levels. So we have everything from medical students and residents, practicing physicians, longtime practicing physicians, but we have physicians assistants, EMS or paramedics, nurse practitioners, nurses, all sorts of people involved in the healthcare field. So I'm trying to think, I really do try to make sure that it's an inclusive podcast, that people can get something out of it.
after a lot of the episodes, you leave a lot of questions open that I have to look up for myself to see how this is relevant to me.
Excellent. Stimulating thought and inquiry.
Yeah, but at the same time, when I asked you what you wanted me as a listener to do after an episode, it was to bring it up during rounds.
Yeah, to start a conversation. So if you're a practicing physician, I would want you to bring it up with colleagues or look into PubMed or do whatever searches you like to do to find the evidence and see how it applies to your practice and use your methods to figure out how it would apply and how you can incorporate that new information that we've provided into your daily work.
Okay, so it's different for students and for practicing physicians, you say?
Absolutely.
Another one is about green stick fractures.
Okay.
Yeah. And can you just describe what that was about?
The green stick fracture, it was looking at distal radius fractures in children ranging from buccals to green stick fractures to complete distal radius fractures.
And what was the conclusion?
The conclusion was if it's just a buccal, symptomatic management would probably be fine.
And what would symptomatic treatment mean?
It can mean everything from a tensor bandage to a splint all the way up to a cast. And as you do more and more invasive procedures, they become more and more uncomfortable. But looking at the child in front of you, sometimes just a splint would be enough. Sometimes a tensor. They might opt for a cast. And so sometimes it's shared decision making. At least that's what I try to do in the emergency department. And so you say, well, this is what will happen if we do this, plan A. This is what will happen when we do plan B. And these are the risks and benefits, and come to some kind of understanding of what would be best in this situation.
Okay, because the way I understand it and the way a lot of the EBM discussions go is that when you say that there is no difference between putting on a cast and not putting on a cast, is that it doesn't really matter. But what you're saying now is that for some kids, a cast might be better, and for some kids, any other kind of treatment might be better. And I think that that guidance, sort of bringing it a step further and adapting the treatment to the patient and using the evidence and then adding the circumstances to get the best possible treatment for your patient, I think that last part is sometimes missing.
Well, that's good constructive criticism, and I'll have to adapt that further as this show evolves.
So I have one last question, I think.
Oh, hit me with your best shot. I'm ready.
Okay. So what have you achieved so far?
I have really, really enjoyed doing this. I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it. And the achievement is actually putting the podcast together. It keeps me up to date because I have to do these critical reviews and I have to look at the literature skeptically. And it allows me to share that information and that work that I've done with other people as part of the FOMED initiative, the Free Open Access to Medical Education Project.
And that's enough?
Well, it is enough for me. I love it. I absolutely love it.
I mean, the first thing you said was that this was all about making the treatment or anything better for patients. And now you're saying that you're doing it because you enjoy doing it.
Well, obviously the overarching philosophy and goal is to provide the best possible patient care. But I enjoy my job tremendously, and I look forward to getting up every morning and doing it. And now this has just become part of it. The SGEM has become part of it on a weekly basis. I get to, on Sundays, do this podcast.
Because the way I see it, you have a problem that you want to address, and you have a goal that you want to achieve, and then you have the means to achieve it.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. And sometimes you mix them up, so you think that the means are actually the goal.
Oh, and the medium is the message.
Well, it can be sometimes, but if the goal is to provide or make other doctors better providers, then how do you measure that? And how do you know if you're achieving what you aim for?
So how do you measure success? You know, I always say one definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And we've been trying the same thing over and over again in medical education for some time. And so it's time for a change. And social media offers a disruptive technology. It's a chance to use it and see if we can change the system for a better and provide the best possible care to patients.
Because you call your podcast The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. And I think that, well, you might sound skeptic on the podcast, but it's not really encouraging people to be skeptics. And how can you encourage them to be more skeptical to what they hear and what they do?
Well, I try to do that, at least with the catchphrase at the end of the podcast, to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you learned it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. And again, it's just like the EBM, just like the evidence-based medicine information. It's sort of embedded in the program. So it's just part of the program and it comes with the message. And so the skepticism hopefully comes with the message, the program as well, so that people learn more about being skeptical and critical thinkers and questioning the literature and not just taking everything at face value. They take it one step further and say, just like you did, well, wait a minute, I heard this on the SGEM, and what did you do? You went and looked it up. You went and looked around the literature more. So I hope that it's encouraging people to take it one step beyond what they learn on the SGEM.
That brings me to the final thing, and that would be the Keener contest.
Ah, the Keener contest. Now, are you bitter because you have not won?
A bit.
A bit.
Because yes. I did give you the right answer once, but I was too late.
You have to be the first.
I'm more of a skeptic than a Keener. But so if you have a Keener contest, and if you're really serious about making people more skeptic about what they hear, I think that the Keener contest should be about something that is contradicting what you're saying on the podcast.
Okay, that's an interesting suggestion. Chris Carpenter originally came up with the Keener contest idea of having something to make it interactive, something to make the SGEM podcast interactive so people would want to do something after they listen to it. And so it's evolving, and I think you make a good point that sometimes maybe we should have a contrary view to say what's the opposite opinion or what's the best evidence on the other side, because there can be more than one opinion when it comes to looking at the evidence itself and interpreting the evidence. So I think that's reasonable to do. I was hoping that you would come up with a Keener contest. I was hoping something from ABBA might be appropriate, but if you've got something that's more critical, I'd be happy to entertain using that as the Keener contest this week.
If you want the listeners to go and study this and think about it in a critical way, then I think that's the information, that's the feedback that you would like.
I think that's completely acceptable and appropriate and relevant feedback for the Keener contest.
Okay. Well, I guess that's my last question.
Well, then I better tell the listeners who won the Keener contest last week, and that was Yifan Li from Western University, and she was able to identify that SPS3 stood for Secondary Prevention of Small Subcortical Strokes, and that was the name of the trial. And again, I'm asking you, Catherine, what is the Keener contest for this week?
So this week's Keener contest is not about being the first, but about being the best, and in this case, the best skeptic. So I would like you to pick one thing that you learned on the SGEM that changed your practice.
So send in your answer to the SGEM at gmail.com and answer Catherine's question. What have you learned on the SGEM that's changed your practice?
And why?
And why?
And how?
And how, and what, and where, and when. That concludes episode number 25 of The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. As always, we would like you to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, subscribe to iTunes, and I'm going to ask Catherine, with her wonderful Swedish accent, to give the SGEM tagline.
Okay, so remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you learned it on the SGEM.
Wonderful. We'll talk to everybody next week. Thank you.